Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this not so snowy Wednesday afternoon, but a little bit of snow earlier caused big trouble, and I know that caused traffic trouble as well, but it's nothing compared to what's going on Wall Street today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down more than 500 points at one point earlier today. There's been a bit of a recovery, now down, it looks like, 463. Oil is down $1.91 a barrel, trading at $26.56 a barrel now, and that is leading the way. Energy stocks have been suffering. Terry Savage writes about all of that in your personal finance at terrysavage.com, and she is in the studio this afternoon. We're looking rested and ready to go. Terry, welcome to the program.
I'm not rested. I was up all night wondering what the opening would be like today, and now I've seen it. It's like that, read Joseph Conrad in The Heart of Darkness in high school, where he looked out over the side and said, the horror.
Was it Kurtz? Yeah, so down 500 points at one point.
Yeah, well, percentage-wise, what do you want? I can give you the bullish argument, the bearish argument, and the honest answer
is... I just want the truth,
Terry
Savage. The savage truth.
Well, the savage truth is not only do I not know, but most people don't know.
Well, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, goodbye. But here's what hangs in the balance here. And you know I always say never make emotional decisions. The issue hanging in the balance now is whether China and the rest of the world, and by the rest of the world, I mean here a couple of statistics. The Russian ruble has crashed. Well, let's start with energy prices. Okay. Both Iran's going to start pumping. Saudi's in a battle with them. They're pumping. And so there's worlds
of Russian
oil.
To flesh that out a bit, the Saudis don't want the Iranians to get any advantage. So
exactly.
It's not in their interest to pull back to get the prices
they're
up because the Iranians
own game.
Would benefit.
Exactly.
Right.
They're playing their own game. The question is, who can last longest at it? It's a real game of chicken in the oil world. So it's driving prices down to the level where at some point it could and will impact U.S. companies. You can say, well, just tell them to stop pumping until the price goes up. I was on the board of Pennzoil Quaker State for a number of years before we sold the company to Shell. And I once naively said that. And they said, Terry, we got to have a stream of income to pay our debt. So the real question is, these companies borrowed to build, do these rigs and so forth. They have to have income. With low prices, do you get defaults? That's not the kind of crisis the mortgage crisis was, but do you get default on energy companies' borrowing?
Well, that's where that word it moves to the next level, right?
Because that's where it gets more serious.
Even though we look at these oil companies and the fact that they're, you know, they have huge profits or they had, they also were borrowing against those profits. So now they're not just
they were borrowing money on the belief that they could pump oil and make a profit, and investors were lending them money, not only banks but people who bought their debt, because they believed, gee, we're going to get a nice yield. Because remember, a year ago at this time, oil was over $60 a barrel. In 2008, it was over $140 a barrel. And if I had stood there in the spring of 2008 before the financial crisis and said, yeah, and it's going to test $25 a barrel, you'd haul me off.
Right.
Okay, but oil is a big thing to us. It's not a deal breaker for the U.S. economy. Some companies will be hurt. Some debt would be hurt. Consumers certainly benefit. But we need to take the bigger picture, and that's how you have to look at our stock market. Because Russia, oil exporter, its ruble is collapsing now at the lowest valuation because they can't sell oil. They've got all kinds of expenses and so forth, and nobody wants a Russian ruble. Ditto, South America, most of South America, particularly Brazil and Venezuela, these are two huge economies for a lot of reasons. Energy and commodity export related with prices down. These countries are staggering. They borrowed in dollars. They have to get a lot more of their own currency to repay their debt. So those loans are in question. China, almost 7% growth. Well, it's down a lot, but they're not collapsing. But they're not buying all these raw materials and using oil. So the big question on the mind of the global markets is, the U.S. economy has been strong, not booming, but strong. We get a benefit from lower oil prices. Love those heating bills coming now. Even they won't be as bad as they were a couple of years ago. Love filling up my tank. Mm-hmm. So the consumers get a benefit. They'll be able to shop. Some U.S. companies have problems because of their debt, particularly in the energy sector. The question is, will the rest of the world's economic slowdown, mostly triggered by China and its commodities, lack of demand now, will that be enough to stall the U.S. economy? Or Well, all the money from around the world that's scared, whether from China and it's happening or Latin America, all the money come to the U.S. dollar. Fed raised rates, dollar's more attractive. And will that money come in and support the U.S. stock market, even though we don't have booming growth? That's the big picture. And right now we're seeing these gyrations, but we haven't seen the real answer to that question.
So if they were going to come in, if those foreign dollars were going to come into the U.S. stock market, when does that happen?
What happened last time? Well, it happened last time. After the market collapsed, Dow was over just a little over 6,700 in March of 2009. We were shocked to find that the dollar, I mean, we were in the middle of our own financial crisis, which spread around the world. We started at that time. We were shocked to find the rest of the world decided everything was bad, but we were the least bad place. Money came here. Banks were paying nothing, as they still are paying nothing. They're not going to put their money in CDs or money market accounts, right, or even short-term treasuries. That money comes and buys our stock market as a safe haven. The dollar is stronger than ever now because people want to put their money in dollars, or they're coming from Latin America to buy real estate in Miami, from China to buy real estate in Canada, for example, and in the U.S. So this is the big question. If anybody tells you they have the answer to how that will play out in the next 6 or 8 months, they want to sell you something. I don't want to sell you anything. I want you to know that over the long run, the U.S., the world is saying the U.S. is the strongest, safest place to be. That's number one. Mm-hmm. And if you can last the long run over 20-year periods, you know. But if you've got liquidity needs for next month or for retirement withdrawals this year, you want to have some cash on hand.
Right now, the Dow is down 508 points. We're going to take a break. I want to ask you about people. You know, we're responsible for our own retirement now more than ever. And there are a lot of people asking questions about that today. We'll kick that around. But first, a look at the traffic hotspots. Dolly McCarthy is in Traffic Central. Well, 22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand along with Terry Savage, and the music is a little somber, not quite a funeral dirge. We're not there yet.
Did our producer Young do that?
He did. So the Dow's down 512 points now. What's the highest?
You asked me that during the break. I'm glad I could quickly check that out for you. I will give you a bunch of dates on which the Dow was down in the 600-700 range. The largest one-day loss occurred in September 29th, 2008. Remember the beginning of that crisis? Dow down 777, but it was only about 7%. A few weeks later, on October 15th of 2008, it was down 733. Really interesting, in between those two dates, however, was the largest one-day gain, October 13th, a gain of 936 points.
Wow.
I remember it well, 11%. And 2 weeks after that big decline of 733, which was October 15th, on October 28th, the market was up 889 points, or 10%. So those of you who, and that wasn't even, by the way, when the market made its lows for that move. That happened in March. So way back when that financial crisis started, we had a couple of 700-point down days interspersed with 800 and 900-point up days. So what does that tell us? The market fluctuates.
Well, thank you. Well, we knew that. We sometimes forget it until we're reminded,
yes,
of it, right?
Moments like this.
And so here we are at the worst start of a new year.
Right.
And I think this is one of the things that's going to really confront this country in 20 or 30 years, the fact that we now are more responsible than ever for our retirement income, you know, that fixed pensions are sort of gone.
Yep.
And so there are people looking at these numbers and looking at the numbers of the past 19 days and wondering if they should do something.
Yeah, well, this is not the time to be doing something because you're surely going to get whipsawed. Remember, most of these 401k plans and IRAs are in mutual funds. The mutual funds will be priced after the close of the market. So if you decide at 10 a.m., I want to get out, you're at the mercy of what happens at the closing price. And just because I mentioned these huge up and down swings within a period of days in 2008 in the fall, you're just as likely to get whipsawed. I'm going to give you a statistic. I want a happy statistic in here.
Good, we could use one.
So I don't have the specific numbers with me, but I use this for the economic forecast luncheon that I gave yesterday. And I actually have to credit my son, who's in the business, for sending me this information. There have been about a dozen instances going back to the early 1960s when the S&P 500 has closed basically flat for the year, which it did last year. The S&P was down less than 1%, the Dow down about 3%. Flat meaning less than 3% up or 3% down. And in every single one of those years that have happened, I think there were seven or eight of them going back to 1961, the next year, the Dow has had double-digit gains, some over 20%.
Well, it's going to have to pick up almost 20% from where it is right now.
You know, it ain't
over
till it's over.
Nope.
No, I mean, I just wanted to give you something happy
to think
about.
Thank you. And then I just rained a little bit on it, didn't I?
Well, don't do that. Let people look. You never make a fast move in a market like this. You know what I've always said. Young people, without doubt, keep contributing.
Well, I was going to say, maybe here's a smart move. You wrote something at terrysavage.com about millennials, and we've only got a minute. So, but the idea that they care more maybe about life insurance.
There was a survey. A life insurance company sent me a press release. Millennials would rather have life insurance and paid time off than employee benefits like 401k plans. And I just wrote this rant saying, wait a minute. Life insurance will pay others if you die too soon. You need long-term investments because the odds are that you're going to live, not die tomorrow. Yeah, you need some term life if you have kids and so forth. But what you have millennials on your side is time. Remember that never 20-year period going back to 1926 where you would have lost money in a diversified portfolio of large company stocks with dividends reinvested, even adjusted for inflation, according to Morningstar's Ibbotson research. Never been a 20-year losing period in large cap American stocks. I don't think it's starting now, despite what's going on in our politics.
You want to go politics?
No, I do not.
Thank you for doing that. TerrySavage.com. Thanks for coming in. Nice to see you. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Coming up after the break, Scott Kleinberg will be here to talk about what's going on in social media. And then later in the half hour, we'll talk to a reporter from the Washington Post about a prototype car from BMW, the thing of the future, maybe. No side view mirrors, no rear view mirrors. Instead, in this car, you look at a series of video screens to see what's going on around you, beside you, as well as behind you. Maybe that'll be in your car one day. That's coming up, but right now this on WGN. WGN 1237, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. I'm Steve Bertrand. Scott Kleinberg is in the studio as well, writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Scott, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, let's talk about TV. You know, we watch TV differently than we've ever watched TV, right?
Yes,
I mean, it used to be that there was appointment television, then there was the VCR, then the DVR, and now it's Netflix and Hulu and blah, blah, blah. So the idea of keep taking ratings and to figure out who's watching and when they're watching has sort of been in flux, too.
Yes.
And now Facebook is involved?
Facebook is involved with Nielsen. And the backstory is Nielsen got really involved with Twitter last year because Twitter is a great place to talk about, you know, award shows and just TV in general. Now Nielsen's seeing the light and Nielsen's saying, well, the conversation about TV is definitely on Facebook. So they're working together to extract data from what you and I are talking about on Facebook and to put it into their ratings.
So that means when I post on my Facebook page, hey, you guys check out River on Netflix. It's a great series.
Yep.
That's going to count for something?
It's going to count for something. And the thing that is so surprising about this story is that they are going to be able to take data from what you're talking about, even if your post isn't public. So it used to be, you know, you wouldn't worry too much about the data coming out if you just shared it with your friends. But now they're using it no matter what. Now, they're not going to be able to use your name or anything you say in your private
messages.
Has
anyone told Edward Snowden about this?
I'm sure once he finds out, everything will be crazy. But it just basically means they're going to take data, they're going to take raw numbers and that type of thing. So your name will never be out there in what you actually watch. But it's a whole different level when they're going into your stuff that is not
right
necessarily made public.
Well, and it's just a reminder that it's not really yours either.
I mean, that is a great reminder.
You're playing on their baseball field. And
yes.
Whatever you do with that baseball, they could look at it.
And so many people, whenever we see those things that come out every year, those fake things that people share that say Facebook does not have a right to use this content, that's where it all comes from. I bet you we see that again because it's true. You have to abide by their rules.
All right, let's go to Starbucks. Oh, I just had a Starbucks here as I get before every show.
You didn't get me.
Kleinberg, I forgot. I was going to buy you lunch today.
I do seem to remember something about that.
Okay, Jan, remember this. On Friday, we have to order. I am buying Scott and you Chipotle because I'm...
That's a very, very kind
I'm feeling for him. You know, I think they're trying to do the right thing and just not working so well. So no wonder you had that chip on your shoulder when you walked in here.
I tried not to let it show, but you know.
Okay, so let's go to the Starbucks because I run over there before every noon hour usually. Yep. Pick up a cup of coffee and usually they have some pretty cool music playing. And I never sort of make the leap to say, how can I find out what this song is?
Yep.
You can do that with Siri. And is it, what's the other one?
Shazam and SoundHound.
Right? Yep. But now Spotify is working. Spotify is kind of taking it to the next level.
Yeah. Spotify has a partnership with Starbucks. So this is one of the things that they're pushing. And basically, you'll be able to use the Starbucks app when you're at your local Starbucks. You make sure the location services are on so your phone can track you, of course. And you'll be able to see, of course, because that, you know, you have to have that. And you'll be able to see in the app the song that's playing and or the last five songs that played, and you can hit one button and save it automatically to a Spotify playlist.
So that's the difference, right? Shazam's not going to do that for you. Siri's not going to do that for you.
You can press a button to do that, but this is very specifically what's playing now, the menu with, you know, five last songs, and you can put it into a playlist.
Right. So then you can go and buy like a $500 coffee machine. Invite people over to your house.
Yep.
Play the Starbucks song list.
Yep.
Put on a green apron.
If you wanted to, yes. Yes.
And then it's just like you're a barista.
You can totally do that. One of the things I see about it that's actually kind of cool.
You
if
see
you're
something
like
else, not just that?
There's that. But, you know, if you're a real coffee person and, you know, let's say you really want to know what's playing at the Seattle Starbucks, this is going to allow them to put together playlist and with Spotify and say, these are the top songs at the Seattle Starbucks. Or maybe they'll eventually do the same thing with Chicago and that kind of thing. So you'll be able to get a taste of, you know, what everybody else is listening
and
to.
And is that something we're going to want to know?
You know, I don't know. I think it depends on who you are and how much you care about that kind of music and how much you care about the culture. They're hoping that people who are really into coffee culture and coffee house music and that kind of stuff. But then again, the Starbucks by my house plays the craziest, weirdest stuff, and I always have my headphones on to avoid it.
Really?
So, yeah. So I'm not sure how this is going to work overall.
You know, I had never thought of that before. So what you're saying then is that there's not really a Starbucks... Is there a Starbucks list of what they have to play, or do they play whatever they want?
You know, that is a great question. They used to. They used to have a Starbucks channel. I think it was actually on like Sirius or like one of those. And they stopped doing that. And I'm sure there's some kind of list that says, you know, what they're supposed to play. But I'm pretty sure the ones I go to, they're just picking stuff that they like.
All right. Amazon Dash. This is one of those things that I still haven't quite got my arms around. But Amazon Dash, it's a button.
Yes.
So let's say I put it on my laundry detergent. I have a button on. It's like I keep thinking of the Office Max or Office Depot easy button.
It really is that.
Right. So I have an easy button and I put it on my big box of Tide.
Yep.
And when my big box of Tide is like 2/3 or 3/4 empty, I smack the button.
Yep.
And then a new box of Tide is delivered to my door, right?
That's perfectly explained.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's what the Amazon Dash button is. And there's a limit to what products you can... Button.
Yeah, they're adding more, but like they added laundry detergent, they added mac and cheese, they added some different kinds of food and stuff like that.
And now, though, I don't even have to hit it's easier than hitting the easy button.
Well, yes, in some cases. They're coming out with devices and hardware that actually knows when you're low on stuff. So there's like a washing machine model that you would pour your Tide into, and when it realizes that your thing is lower than a quarter of the tank, it will automatically low without pressing the button. So
you have to buy like a pitcher.
You have to buy like a specific thing where this button works.
So you have to buy a pitcher so that you don't have to order your Tide when it's 2/3 empty.
Yes, yes. But the thing that I saw on this that it was a great example.
You're not
was,
laughing when
was,
that.
Well, you know, I mean, it's like they're going to expand them to more things. So, like, there's a printer that will automatically know when you run low on ink and send ink to you. I think that's a brilliant use of it. That's better than laundry detergent for me because the only time you know you're out of ink in your printer is when your printer doesn't print.
Right.
Now, it'll automatically show up at the door and it'll be like, oh, great, I'm low on ink.
Okay.
I think that's useful.
I'll give you that one. That's a good one. Are people actually using it?
Yeah. The Dash buttons are super popular.
Really?
Yeah. People seem to really, I mean, they're like the perfect combination of cool tech and laziness. all put together.
Right. It's like a couch geek. It's for a couch geek.
Yeah, exactly.
There also was the list. Splash Data comes out with a list of the most used passwords every year.
The worst passwords.
The worst passwords. Okay.
Yes.
And Steve Cochran was talking quite a bit about it earlier today, so there's no need to run down the list, but most of them are like, you know, numbers in a row, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or password or things.
Yep.
But in the top 10, number 7 is football, and number 10 is baseball.
Yep.
So
yep.
So people are, okay, so I guess it's not the most used. When I saw this list, it's just what they think are the worst.
They think, yeah, they think are the worst, but also based on, you know, usage.
The fact that they're used a lot,
so it is used a lot, but they're still the worst ones that are used. I personally think when it comes to these things, I think people are setting up passwords because they have to set up a password for an account. And the first thing they say is, oh, I'll go back tomorrow and fix it. Now, this is a silly idea, but I think that's what they do. And they type in baseball and they're like, oh, I'll just go back tomorrow and fix it. But they never do.
Well, I think people have passwords for things that they care about and passwords for things that they don't.
Yes,
right?
I would agree with that.
I just set up an account with Politico.com yesterday. I'm not paying them anything. It's just I needed to register.
Sure.
So for that, I have just a pretty generic password that I use over and over and over again.
And if you're using something to register, that's completely different than using something for Twitter. Because if you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 as your Twitter password and someone just goes in and guesses that, because why wouldn't you guess that? And all of a sudden they take over your account and tweet for you. That's one of the worst things you could possibly ever do.
That's Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune, writes about social media. And tomorrow, or make that on Friday when you hear him, he'll have a big fat burrito in his mouth.
I am looking forward to it.
All right. I'll have to get your order. You're listening to the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Orion. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. All right, on my drive in today, I had full awareness of the cars that were behind me, in front of me, and beside me throughout my two-hour commute. That's because I barely move for 2 hours. But what about if you're actually driving at speed? Matt McFarland is a writer for The Washington Post, covers innovations, in fact, the editor of innovations, and he joins us on a phone line now. Matt, welcome to the program. I'm sorry, Matt. Let's try that again. Hello, Matt. I didn't have the button pushed there. How are you?
Hey, it's Matt. How are you doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound great. All right, so I'm interested in this idea you write about in the Post that in the future we might have not a rear-view mirror, certainly not side-view mirrors, but instead a bank or one continuous camera in front of us as we're driving, right?
Right, yeah. The idea is to replace your rear-view mirror with essentially a camera screen, which would piece together footage from multiple cameras. Two of those cameras would likely be positioned where your side mirrors are right now, so you wouldn't be looking outside the car anymore to check and see what's on your left and right, but you would have kind of a broad viewpoint of everything happening behind you, just illustrated on this video screen.
So when I was picturing this, I was thinking of maybe three separate monitors, but maybe the way you're describing it is that these three cameras then would work together to combine one singular picture on the screen.
Yeah, exactly. It's still early, and different people are trying out different techniques, but what appears to be the most promising approach is to really have the multiple cameras and then just to combine it all into one stream, so that a driver looks up at this mirror and sees everything happening behind them, and there are no more blind spots. They simply have a complete understanding of what is going on behind them.
Now, you wrote that in 1969 they tried this. The good news is it worked. The bad news is you had to be driving a convertible with the top down.
Right, exactly. That mirror was about 6 feet wide, and it gave a great view, but there were lots of questions about aerodynamics, and yeah, it's not going to work in any car with a roof, so that really didn't go anywhere.
But you bring up an interesting point, because, you know, I want to talk safety, but there also is this sort of issue of aerodynamics. You know, the side view mirrors stick out from the car, they impede aerodynamics, and if you can get rid of that or limit it more, you're going to increase fuel efficiency for cars.
Yeah, exactly. And the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers and Tesla actually petitioned the government last year asking to say, hey, can we replace traditional mirrors with these camera systems? And they argued that if we did this, you would have a really good impact on fuel efficiency just because the vehicle is more aerodynamic.
Well, we're all seeing cameras now, rear view cameras, for when we back up. I mean, not to look behind us when we're driving. So I guess we're getting more and more used to them, but honestly, Matt, I bought a new car last year, and I have a rear view camera when I'm backing up. I still am not used to it. It's been 6 or 8 months. It seems like there would be a huge learning curve when it comes to looking at a camera in front of you rather than a side view mirror.
Right. Yeah, that's a real problem, that if you make this new technology, you want it to be something that's very intuitive so that any driver that's been trained on our traditional system can just hop in this car and suddenly feel comfortable and feel like they know what is going on around the vehicle. One automotive safety researcher I spoke with really cautioned that we need to do research into this to figure out how do you implement these systems in such a way that all existing drivers feel really comfortable and can use them effectively when we get in these new vehicles.
Anytime someone tells me it's perfectly intuitive, I start to run for the hills because it never quite seems to work. Have they looked at the safety? I mean, would these cameras improve safety?
So that a lot of people will say, yeah, it seems like it should, but there actually hasn't really been that research because it hasn't been legal. The government's rules right now say, hey, you need to have these traditional mirrors. So yeah, no one's doing the tests yet, but that really needs to happen just to know for sure that, hey, these alternatives are going to be superior.
Well, it's sort of a thing then. How do they prove that they're safer without testing whether they're safer? So someone's going to have to give, whether it's the technology or the law.
Yeah, and it seems like the law will kind of be flexible, and the Department of Transportation says they're looking at what they're doing and looking for ways to accelerate innovation and just get out of the ways, these instances where technology can really help and improve safety.
That's Matt McFarland. He's the editor of innovations for the Washington Post. Matt, thanks for taking the time to join us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And stay inside this week, and it's going to storm where you are.
Will do.
All right. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.